produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, artists, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, stash.normal.org. And continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. Visit www.redaphid.com. It's Tuesday, April 15th, and it's 4:20 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. On this tax day, we here at Normal would like to remind you that marijuana prohibition costs $7.6 billion of your tax dollars every year. If you think that's ridiculous, then join us here at Normal. You can learn everything you need to know at norml.org. Call your Congress as well at 202-224-3121. They'll ask your zip code and put you in touch with your elected officials. Tell your representatives that it's time to stop wasting taxpayer dollars in an effort to stop people from smoking marijuana. It is still a government of we the people, but you have to step up and do your part. Tuesday is Government at Work Day on the podcast, and coming up after the news, we're going to speak with Matt Simon of the New Hampshire Coalition for Common Sense Drug Policy about the latest developments as a medical marijuana bill passed the House and will be heard by the Senate. After that, we've got a musical break for you. Cannabis Carrie found a smokin' Latino groove from Texas with Los Gallos and their song Free the People, which is a perfect tune to play while filling out a last-minute 1040 form. And to end the show, we're joined by Normal's executive director, Alan St. Pierre, who has some updates on Normal fundraising campaigns like the 420 Money Bomb and the Roll Your Own screenings of Super High Me. So sit back and relax with your favorite strain. This is your Normal Daily Audio Stash. Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. Health Canada looking for firm to grow its medical marijuana. From the Canadian Press, Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. Health Canada is looking for someone to grow its weed. The department served notice Monday it will soon invite firms to bid on a contract to cultivate and distribute medical marijuana, which is now being done in Flin Flon, Manitoba, by Prairie Plant Systems Incorporated. The winning firm will be expected to deliver a steady stream of government-approved dope to certified medical users starting in the fall. Dope? Why is the media allowed to get away with such flagrant anti-medical marijuana bias? If the story were about a government seeking a contract with an oxycodone supplier, would they talk about a, quote, steady stream of government-approved hillbilly heroin? Back to the news story. Ottawa has been a reluctant supplier of pot since a series of court rulings forced it into the medical marijuana business. The marijuana program licenses certified medical users to grow their own pot, to have someone grow it for them, or to buy it straight from Health Canada. The department has paid Prairie Plant Systems more than $10 million to cultivate government-certified dope in a mine shaft in Flin Flon, Manitoba. Well, there's dope again. And it should be noted that this mine shaft in Flin Flon is one of the most environmentally polluted areas in all of Canada. Back to the news. Ron Marzell, a Toronto lawyer who recently brought the matter before the federal court on behalf of a group of medical users, says he's concerned about any monopoly on legal production and supply of the drug. He said, quote, The government's just had a horrible track record in terms of supplying medication to patients. There are many different strains of cannabis out there, and the government's position to date has been, well, we're growing one strain, and we've got one supplier, and that's it. Live with it. The pharmacological evidence is that different ailments require, and different symptomology require, treatment with different strains. And the government hasn't paid heed to that at all. End quote. Nope. To the government, a weed is a weed is a weed. They aren't too thrilled about growing dope, much less worried about which particular strain of dope it is. And based on reports from my Canadian friends, it's a pretty swaggy strain. It's as ridiculous and cruel as refusing to stock morphine, ibuprofen, and acetaminophen in a hospital because you've got plenty of aspirin. Ad urges Pawlenty to allow medical marijuana use. St. Paul, Minnesota. A new TV ad features a woman suffering from extreme back pain, tearfully asking Governor Tim Pawlenty not to stand in the way of a medical marijuana bill in Minnesota.
I ended up falling through a ceiling and compressing 7 vertebrae. I woke up screaming. I had pain like I'd never experienced before. And I had my first surgery at that point. So they did a fusion, they did a second fusion, they did a third fusion. Have you guys ever had a patient with 10 surgeries? The pain was just so bad, I couldn't stand it. I'm in more and more pain all the time, and it's gotten to the point where I spend most of the time in bed. Really, the only thing that gave me relief was marijuana. It relaxes the muscles in my back. My children have even said, Mom, it's okay, we understand. And I've said to them, no, don't understand. It's not okay to break the law. It's not. But here I am doing it. I'm tired of being a criminal. Please, Governor Pawlenty, do not veto the medical marijuana bill.
The Washington-based Marijuana Policy Project says it's spending more than $100,000 to air the message statewide starting later this week. A bill that would make Minnesota the 13th state to allow medical marijuana use is headed for a House vote. The Senate approved the legislation last year. But Pawlenty says he stands with law enforcement in opposing the bill. The woman in the ad, Lynn Rubenstein Nicholson of Minneapolis, says she's tired of being a criminal. Nicholson says she broke her back as a child and currently can't use marijuana because she is required to take drug tests as a condition of receiving other pain medications. Wow. As offensive as I find Governor Pawlenty's opposition to medical marijuana, I find it more offensive that patients in pain are required to take a drug test in order to receive care. The point is to avoid prescribing powerful pain meds to addicts, but what the effect has been is that doctors are severely under-treating pain in this country for fear of being locked up by the feds. Lest you think that passing medical marijuana in Minnesota will help in that regard, think again. Here in Oregon, where we've had medical marijuana for 10 years, we have a major health care provider that is threatening not to provide any prescriptions for pain medications if a person is a medical marijuana patient. Once again, it's that underlying prejudice that somehow the pot patients are just addicts with an excuse. Our opponents wish to take away our medical marijuana patients' right to work, to drive, to take pain medications, to teach, to run for office, or to work in government. It's a modern shunning. If you won't take the pharma drugs like a good citizen, then you're just another pothead. By the way, check out the review of the video that I've got linked at the blog from out at Wonkette, entitled Medical Marijuana Ads Featuring Tragically Ill People Bum Everybody Out. Most tellingly, read the comments of those insensitive people who are dismissing this disabled woman because of her weight. You know, people, being confined to a wheelchair since childhood might just lead to some weight gain. Video released of teens forcing toddler to smoke marijuana from The Advocate. Pataskala, Ohio. A video showing an infant being forced to smoke marijuana by two Pataskala teenagers has been released by the Drug Enforcement Administration. The child, now age 2, but about 18 months old at the time, according to a federal complaint, can be seen squirming on a couch to avoid a marijuana pipe being held in front of her face. Melvin L. Blevins, 18, and Angel Daly, 16, have both been charged for the incident, Blevins in federal court, and Daly in the Juvenile Division of the Licking County Court of Common Pleas. Daly is the daughter of Dawn Daly, 39, and the niece of Tim Daly, 38, who were allegedly found to have more than a ton of marijuana and millions of dollars in their Harrison Township homes during the March raids. The Daly brothers and Blevins were charged with conspiracy to distribute more than 100 kilograms of marijuana, according to a federal indictment released Thursday. The tape was discovered after Blevins sold a camcorder containing the tape to a Columbus pawn shop on February 18th, the federal criminal complaint alleges. I reported on this awful case last week, but I had to follow up on this since the DEA has now released the video. You gotta remember that the only successful plank in the prohibitionist argument is the "what about the children" argument. This video will go a long way toward reinforcing some people's negative attitudes about marijuana, so it's important that we address the issue and point out that we are as offended by the misuse and abuse of marijuana as they are. Videos like this are why we support responsible regulation of marijuana. We want to make it tougher for those teens to acquire marijuana in the first place. Drug dealers, don't ask for ID. Tuesday is our look at your government at work, here at the Audio Stash. While the inevitable re-legalization of cannabis hemp will have to happen at the federal level, the steps leading to that destination take place at the state and municipal levels. We focus in on the initiatives, bills, and amendments regarding cannabis across all 50 states, and what activists like you are doing to enact a positive reform to our cruel and outdated marijuana laws. Body dies, the ego cries, the birds they sing, the creatures learn. It's an honest day's work, yeah, 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 yeah. If you're working hard to make an impact in your city and state, please email us at stash@normal.org and let's share your local efforts with the worldwide cannabis community. Together, we can affect our government at work. The afternoon pollution rises high into the sky. How can we still deny? This is your normal weekly legislative roundup, a summary of pending state legislation, and tips to help you become involved in changing the laws in your state. New Hampshire. House Bill 1623, which would decriminalize the possession of small amounts of cannabis, was passed by the House on March 18. The Senate Judiciary Committee will now hold an important hearing on this bill at 3 p.m. on Tuesday, April 22nd. All supporters are encouraged to attend. Additionally, our allies at New Hampshire Common Sense are now encouraging supporters to contact Governor John Lynch directly and urge him to rethink his assertion that he will veto House Bill 1623 if it reaches his desk. New Hampshire supporters are strongly encouraged to urge their representatives and their governor to support these bills via Normal's online advocacy system. See our website at normal.org. Minnesota. Minnesota's House Ways and Means Committee has approved Senate File 345 along with its companion bill, House File 655. From Ways and Means, it now goes to a House floor vote, and if passed there, the governor's desk. This legislation would ensure that medical marijuana patients in Minnesota would no longer have to fear arrest or prosecution from state law enforcement. However, Governor Pawlenty has indicated that he is inclined to veto this bill if it gets to his desk. Minnesotans are strongly encouraged to urge their representatives and the governor to support these bills via Normal's online advocacy system at normal.org. California. In an important victory for medical marijuana patients, the California Assembly Judiciary Committee approved Assembly Bill 2279, sponsored by Assemblyman Mark Leno. This bill would protect Prop 215 patients from employment discrimination, most notably via urine testing. The bill does not protect workers in safety-sensitive jobs, including law enforcement. The measure was approved on a party-line vote, with 6 Democrats in favor, 3 Republicans opposed, and 1 Democrat abstaining. Normal will continue to update you on the progress of this important bill. And finally, in Rhode Island, the Rhode Island Senate Committee on Health and Human Services unanimously approved Senate Bill 2623 on Wednesday, April 9. Senate Bill 2693 would set up a dispensary system for Rhode Island state-qualified medical cannabis patients and will now go before the Senate floor. Rhode Islanders are strongly encouraged to write their Senate and House members in support of this measure and its companion bill, House Bill 7888, through Normal's online advocacy system at normal.org.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 12 states today, and THCF has medical clinics in 6 of those states. Our physicians help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help them obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, Colorado, Nevada, Hawaii, and California. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at www.hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
We're making more progress on the effort to decriminalize marijuana state by state, and we look now to the New England states and specifically New Hampshire. We're joined by telephone with Matt Simon, the executive director of the New Hampshire Coalition for Common Sense Marijuana Policy. You can learn more about their efforts at nhcommonsense.org. And Matt, welcome to the podcast today.
Hi, Russ. It's great to be back on.
Well, we had been reporting on New Hampshire's effort to decriminalize marijuana. Let's remind everybody what the bill in the legislature is seeking to do.
Okay, we're talking about House Bill 1623. It seeks to reduce the penalty for possessing very small amounts of marijuana, less than a quarter of an ounce, the way it currently reads. From a Class A misdemeanor carrying up to a year in jail and up to a $2,000 fine, trying to reduce that down to a violation punishable only by a $200 fine.
Now, is that similar to other states in the area? Are there other states up there in the New England states that have decriminalized marijuana?
Yes, we look to Maine and mention Maine pretty frequently as an example because, you know, our opponents in New Hampshire like to point out all these doom and gloom scenarios of increased drug use and horrible things that are going to happen in our state if we pass this. And Maine decriminalized a much larger amount of marijuana back in 1976. An ounce and a quarter or less there has been a violation since 1976. And when we point out that our neighbor next door hasn't threatened anybody with jail time for marijuana possession in 30-some years, and they obviously don't have any different of a marijuana problem than New Hampshire does, so the logic really clicks in for people.
So where are we at now at the legislature as far as getting this bill passed?
Well, we have a hearing coming up in the Senate. It passed the House, surprisingly, by more than 50 votes, and that was March 18th, and we've been gearing up for our first hearing in the Senate, which takes place next week, April 22nd, at 3 p.m., the Senate Judiciary Committee, 5 senators will listen to testimony from both sides, and it will be our next big day in the sun.
So a week from today, Tuesday, April 22nd, people will need to get involved up there in New Hampshire, and I assume you'll have all the details at nhcommonsense.org.
That's absolutely right.
Now, when you're fighting against your opponents here, what are some of the tools that you're using to convince the public? I mean, I just received a press release from your offices saying that the polling shows that people are really supportive of this idea in New Hampshire.
Absolutely. All along, we've been saying public opinion is on our side, and we've tried to demonstrate that formally in many different ways, by getting people to the State House, by having people contact their legislators and write letters to the editor. We're doing very well in the media. We're doing very well with all these little informal ways of showing public support. But we just got poll results. The Marijuana Policy Project commissioned an independent poll of New Hampshire voters, and we got our results back. And they prove everything that we've been saying all along. It's a majority of people in the state, 53% of voters support reducing marijuana penalties, and only 34% are opposed, with 13% undecided. And we even got an even split among Republican voters in the state, which is going to shock a lot of people, because it's usually a knee-jerk Republican response up here by the politicians. I've been saying all along that the voters aren't necessarily like that, that there are a lot of more libertarian-minded Republican voters in New Hampshire that see the common sense of reducing marijuana penalties. So I think this is kind of the final piece of the puzzle in our argument to the legislature and to the governor. Do have public support. It's right here in this poll, and you can see it at nhcommonsense.org.
Absolutely. We'll have a link for that up on our blog as well at stash.normal.org. So you've passed the House. You've got a hearing coming up in the Senate. What do you think your chances are at the Senate?
Well, we've got some major obstacles to overcome. The governor has said he will veto the bill if it gets to his desk, and his argument against it is that it, guess what, sends the wrong message to young people.
Mm-hmm.
The Senate Majority Leader, also a Democrat, Senator Joe Foster, said exactly the same thing, that it sends the wrong message to young people. So, I mean, we've obviously won in the war of public opinion. I can tell that by the fact that our opponents only have one argument left, and it's one that has no substance. When they don't have any other arguments, they resort to this send the wrong message thing, and people are just rolling their eyes at it at this point. But the political reality is that it's going to be difficult to convince the Senate in an election year to take this step. But we're gonna make the best case that we can for them. I'm not a senator. I don't get a vote. But I definitely know we're winning the war on public opinion. And if we don't win with this bill this year, we are going to win on the issue within the next year or two.
Now, as I've followed a lot of these campaigns to decriminalize state by state, I find that one of the arguments that the prohibitionists will continue to put forth is this idea that if we decriminalize, somehow this is going to cause all sorts of terrible harms. What are some of the things they're trying to paint this bill as up in New Hampshire? Has this been getting any media attention?
It's gotten a lot of media attention this year, and the media attention has been mostly positive, and that which hasn't been positive has at least been fair. We haven't seen some of the, you know, the insults and the usual nonsense that accompanies this discussion or non-discussion. We had, for example, we're really happy this week, New Hampshire Public Television ran an 8-minute segment on a program called NH Outlook. That's also posted at our website at nhcommonsense.org, our link to it. And it's just a terrific 8-minute segment. They interviewed Governor Wentz and Senator Foster saying the send the wrong message thing, but they interviewed everybody from our side, and it's just a very positive piece. Anybody who sits down and watches that in the state, I feel very good about the fact that that's airing around the state this week. And overall, the more light we shine on the issue, the better we do, because they can't substantiate any of those claims about decrim leading to increased problems with marijuana use.
Now, on the other side of the issue, when we're trying to argue with these legislators and trying to change their minds, one of the points that law enforcement will bring up is that we're somehow exaggerating the issue, that not a whole lot of people actually go to jail for marijuana, that usually they just get a fine or something like that, or it gets dismissed anyway. So how do we convince them about the true harms of marijuana criminalization when they claim that there's not that many people really being imprisoned for it?
Well, first of all, if they're right and nobody's going to jail for a first offense or a pound of marijuana, what's the point of having that penalty on the books anymore anyway? It's obvious that these laws were written for the 1970s, not for the 21st century. Shouldn't we, even if you're right and this is something that's just on paper and not in the real world, why don't we change what's on paper? Doesn't stand a reason, you know.
Yeah.
So that argument, I don't think that's resonated very well coming from the other side with decision makers. I think it sounds kind of silly. We can't change the law because we've already changed our practice, but we need to have the law on the books so that we can threaten people into, you know, seeking help, whatever that is, or turning in their friends or their family members. It's kind of insidious when you strip it down to that. So I don't think it's working very well for the other side to bring that up.
Yeah, and you know, I think people understand the nature of it too, that the harm from the marijuana arrest is not necessarily, you know, going to jail. It's having your name in the paper. It's possibly losing a job or a license or a student loan, or there's so many other harms that can come from marijuana criminalization aside from just jailing.
Absolutely right. And, well, you know, when you point out that all these other states haven't threatened anybody with a jail cell in X number of years, then it just clicks for people that incarceration, we need to rethink, you know, the way we use incarceration in this society, period. With numbers, you know, when these laws were written, there were less than 200,000 people incarcerated in the whole country, and now we've got over 2.3 million. So it's clear we have to reassess the value of incarceration as a society. Why not change the laws that are on the books about possession of marijuana?
Well, with the help of people listening out there, if you get involved at nhcommonsense.org and call the governor, call your senators, we can make a difference in New Hampshire. We can do this state by state because the public, as the polls show, are behind us. We'll have a link to that poll as well up on stash.normal.org. Matt Simon, the executive director for New Hampshire Coalition for Common Sense Marijuana Policy, thanks for joining us again here on the Daily Audio Stash.
Hey, thank you, Russ. Have a great day.
Hello, I'm Casper Leach, host of Time for Hemp. When our politicians passed the Marijuana Tax Act in 1937, the citizens of the United States had no idea that a new civil war had begun. Now, after more than 7 decades of this war's escalation and spending well over $1 trillion of taxpayers' money, the result has been an arrest record of more than 37 million brothers and sisters for nonviolent drug offenses. Every year, we choose to continue this war. We do so at the cost of well over $69 billion. Add to this, we are building prisons faster than we are building schools. In fact, the prison industry is now one of the fastest growing industries in the United States. We must end this civil war. We can with your help. Please, join LEAP, the law enforcement against prohibition, and become part of the solution to ending the war on drugs. Go to leap.cc and find out how to become a member.
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take the time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. All right, time for our musical break, and welcome to Tax Day, Stashers. We're serving up some smooth jazz, rock and roll influenced by Latino grooves to ease your stress. Los Gallos is a Texas-based band with a sound like Stevie Ray Vaughan and Carlos Santana playing some smooth Steely Dan track. The upbeat lyrics of Free the People are a familiar mantra to the cannabis community. When you're paying your tax bill, let's remember that it is our government. We are paying for it. Let your voice be heard. You can learn more about these groovy Texans by visiting their website at losgallos.com. There is also information on this artist at music.podshow.com. And, of course, you can get the download of the MP3 from our website at stash.normal.org. This is Los Gallos with their song, Free the People.
Hi, this is Allison Holcomb, Director of the Marijuana Education Project at the ACLU of Washington, and you're listening to Radical Russ on the Normal Daily Audio Stack.
Hi, I'm Russ Belville, the Associate Director of Oregon Normal, a chapter of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. I'm proud to announce the release from Oregon Normal of the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act Handbook. This is the definitive guide for the patient, caregiver, or grower in Oregon trying to learn the ins and outs of our medical marijuana program. The guide answers common questions from, how do I register with the state to use cannabis medicinally? And what are the possession limits regarding plants and medicine? To questions like, what do I tell my landlord or the police about my medical marijuana? And what if my doctor won't help me with a marijuana recommendation? The handbook also contains a complete copy of the Oregon Revised Statutes governing medical marijuana. For your own copy, check out our website at ornorml.org. All right, big treat here on the Normal Daily Audio Stash. We're joined by the Executive Director of Normal, Alan St. Pierre from Washington, D.C. Alan, welcome back to the show.
Good day, Russ.
Well, this is, of course, the big week here. We're all looking forward to Sunday, April 20th, 420, or as I like to call it, Cannabis Liberation Day. Let's tell everybody what's going on with Normal and how they can help on 420, help our mission.
Well, this is indeed a big week. In fact, it really is kind of bookended between today, Tax Day, a day when only marijuana smokers, as far as I can see, are holding our hands way up in the sky, waving them, saying, please, please tax us. So here we are today at a tax day, and 5 to 6 days later, we will hit 420. And these 2 days really signify where marijuana prohibition is at after 70 years. One, we want to be taxed and treated just like beer, wine, alcohol, tobacco consumers, and we want to celebrate this day, and 420 is the most organic celebration there is around marijuana.
Now, 420, how did it ever come to be that 420 was the number, the day, the time? What's the genesis of that?
Well, going back to the mid-1980s, according to the lore of 420, and it's really High Times Magazine and its editors at the time, Stephen Hager and Steve Bloom, who took a communication, a letter to the editor from a group of students in San Rafael, California, who would, between the end of their school day and their intramural sports, and which is around 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and then around 5 o'clock when the institutional food hall opened, well, there was some sort of downtime, and they found themselves quite regularly meeting between 4 and 5, using some marijuana, priming their appetites for that lovely college institutional food awaiting them. And they found that, you know, it was around 4:20 every day. It was like their tea time, if you will, and so they started to sort of sign off on that. And I started to see references to 420 in the late 1991-1992 era, and by 1994-95, here at Normal, we would have people sign off on letters or their donations to Normal with, rather than sincerely or thank you, they would just sign 420. And by the late 1990s, it is so institutionalized that there are very few mainstream movies where the characters are using cannabis, where if you pay close attention, the clock on the wall or in the background indicates 420. It was in many songs. It was a major code by the late 1990s. In fact, I was invited on to the now defunct NPR show Anthem, and I thought to myself, that's got to be it. This has got to be the zenith of this if I'm on NPR talking about it. But that was 1999. So here we are today in 2008. And what will happen on 420 this year? A couple of major things. And one major point within that is the commerciality of 420 today. It's not just enough that marijuana smokers get together and celebrate marijuana and think about, you know, changing the laws, but it is amazing to see how many major multi-million dollar entities latch on to 420. Just this 420 alone, at the top of my head, there are four or five major movies or documentaries coming out. There's Super High Me, there is The Union, there is, I can't remember, at least two or three other major movies that are going to be coming out during this period of time, and they all reflect on marijuana and the culture of marijuana, and none of them are damning or speak in derogatory terms around cannabis. They celebrate cannabis. They speak to the fun associated with it, and many of them also demonstrate the vexation that prohibition causes.
Well, the 420 being embedded into our cultural landscape is definitely something everybody can see. I recall seeing it in Quentin Tarantino's Pulp Fiction, where the clocks were set to 420. It's gotten so ingrained that a couple of weeks ago when I was reviewing that ONDCP Stoners in the Mist video, mm-hmm. I was looking for clocks to say 420, and it actually said 447. So I was a little disappointed.
By the way, right here on my door, when you come into my door in the normal office, I have cut out from a city paper, and this is one of these advertisements I'm sure many of us have seen, particularly in those type of papers or gay papers, that are soliciting marijuana smokers or other drug users to get involved with some sort of health study. And so the headline is, it's 419, got a minute?
Yeah.
And so even government agencies, which this is an NIH NIDA entity, even they latch onto that 420 as an important cultural touchstone.
And I think it is important to note, you know, what a power we have as a culture, that we're marketed to by, you know, food manufacturers, movies, songs. There's just so much marijuana in the culture. And I wonder how much that would change. Do you think it would change if we were successful in getting the end of adult marijuana prohibition? Or is the culture born of the prohibition or of just the nature of the plant?
That's a very good question. Well, we could look back to this past couple of weeks where the beer industry, you know, heartily celebrated the end of 75 years of beer prohibition. And you know, I enjoy a microbeer every so often, and I'm not at all aware of any subculture in the United States that celebrates beer on a special day, or the day, in this case, when it was made legal again. So that's a very good question. I'd like to think that there would be some sort of celebration that would go on post-prohibition. But, hey, it passes prologue after decades of sanity returning to the marketplace rather than government-imposed prohibition. It might just disappear.
I can't wait to find out.
Me too. I want to be there with you for that.
Now, let's get to business at hand here with 420. Normal's involved in a marketing scheme, a roll-your-own screenings. Tell us all how that can benefit your local Normal chapter.
Well, this is a great program. So happy to see that longtime Normal supporter Doug Benson and the producers of the Super High movie have come up with a great open access promotion. And that is that, sure, people can go to the movies and pay, what, $8, $9, $10 to go see it. But on 420, individuals can go to Normal chapters and other marijuana law reform affiliates around the country, and they can check out for free this very funny documentary. And the producers did it, obviously, not only to build buzz around their particular marketing plan, but they also recognize that, you know, it is really hard to get people who want to see marijuana law reform come out, and literally come out into the city park, to come out to protest. And they thought that it would be a unique way for marijuana law reformers to organize on a Sunday afternoon, more or less, and watch this very funny hour-and-a-half documentary, and then, you know, certainly organize afterwards about what to do to continuously push for marijuana law reform. So many dozens of Normal chapters are going to be having these around the country. A lot of other entities, bars, head shops, medical marijuana dispensaries on the West Coast. It's going to be a great day to celebrate overall, but also to see this documentary, which for anybody who had ever seen Super Size Me, it really, this particular movie does a great job of not only poking some fun and parody at it, but recognizing the great working theme of it, that you know, in the case of Supersize Me, the individual was going to eat too much McDonald's and likely get sick. In this case here, we've been told by the government that if you smoke even a little bit of marijuana, it's a terrible health hazard. Well, a lot of medical marijuana users legally consume prodigious amounts of cannabis, and Doug Benson, for a 30-day period, one, abstained from using cannabis so that he could be tested and judged what the effects on it was, and then he went into a 30-day mass use of cannabis, and he is a medical marijuana card holder in California, so he could legally do so. And it provides from some hilarity and really undercuts the government's argument that even when marijuana, one could say, is abused, that it does not rise to the level of prohibition, and the individuals who use it are not criminals.
And what about the other promotion we've got going on, the normal 420 money bomb?
Oh, well, you know, we're very impressed with what Representative Ron Paul and former presidential candidate did this past fall in putting out a one day and asking all of his supporters, say, listen, even if you just send us $5, let's put all of our assets together and move forward with the campaign. And so he branded this concept that most of us now know, a money bomb, a one-day event where you make, if you will, micro donations to a big macro event. And so on this particular 420, for the first time ever, Normal's launching the 420 money bomb. And we're asking everybody who wants to see marijuana law reform, even if they make a small donation of a suggested $4.20, this would be a great way to get people involved. It sets a low threshold. We found out last year that when asking people to join for $4.20 as compared to our usual $35, that we had the largest number of people ever join the organization in its 37-year history. 780 people last year joined Normal. And this year, obviously, we want to replicate, if not double that amount.
420 on 420 at the 420 Money Bomb. You can check out the website at 420moneybomb.org and also from our main page at normal.org. And it's always fun when you get to buy something for 420. I love catching that. Sometimes you'll find it in a restaurant or
Absolutely, and I certainly have a lot of fun with it, and recently did at an ice cream shop here in Washington with my better half, Sarah, where she wanted an ice cream cone, and we went up and got one, and the amount of the cone with tax was $4.20. So I said, oh, my favorite number. And the young man behind the counter said, oh, oddly, my favorite number two.
What a coincidence.
The kinship we shared at that exact moment in time, and Sarah suggested, well, then maybe we should get together under the banner of Normal. And the guy said, Normal? Do you know what Normal is? And, well, you know, I frankly look more like a narc than the head of Normal. And so when I gave him a business card and said, well, yeah, I do have a little knowledge of Normal, I also think I recruited an intern.
Well, that's excellent. And that's one of the things about the 420 code. I think these kind of things evolve, you know, when we're under the threat of arrest just for being who we are. People learn little codes to be able to identify each other in public, and I think that's probably the easiest one to use.
No, absolutely. In fact, I've seen many great examples of where it was used. A further one would be we had interns who were working at Normal one summer, and they needed to take in some more roommates, and they didn't know how to advertise so that they could necessarily keep the house harmonious, so they put in their want ad, male, female, progressive, and who respects 420. And they had more than enough like-minded people contact them and kept the house more than harmonious.
Well, let's get all those people together to make a 420 donation on 420 to Normal. Help us to fight for the end of adult marijuana prohibition. There's just so many of us out there. There's no reason we can't make this happen.
Absolutely. And thank you very much for putting the flag out and attracting all the folks.
Absolutely. Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, joining us from Washington, D.C. Thanks, Alan, and have a great 420.
Thank you, too, Russ. Be safe.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy, and web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org, and you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with a cannabis quote from the actor John Wayne, who once said, quote, "There's been no top authority saying what marijuana does to you. I really don't know that much about it. I tried it once, but it didn't do anything to me," end quote. A lot of you would be surprised to know that John Wayne had actually tried smoking marijuana, but it's true, and so many people have. Over 90 million people in the United States.